Hello, this is Alex Hosteller, and you are listening to Launch Your Life, the podcast for innovators, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, change seekers, and go-getters looking to make a difference in this world. If you're listening right now, you're already on the right track to making your goals and dreams become a reality. So join us now in the movement to launch your life and show everyone that it can be done. The sky is not the limit, your belief system is, so never let anything hold you back.
I am so excited to have Joe and Chris on the broadcast today. They are the CEO and CTO of the publicly traded revolutionary blockchain company, Lannister Holdings and Lannister Development.
Hello. Thanks for having us, Alex.
Joe, you have an awesome background of over the past 15 years working in the entrepreneur field. Would you like to tell everyone more about what all you did?
Sure. I'm Joseph Snyder. I'm the CEO of Lannister Holdings and Lannister Development. Alex was saying, We are a publicly traded company in the United States based out of Phoenix, Arizona. Our ticker symbol on the OTC market is NBDR. No big deal, right? Just went public. No big deal, right?
Awesome.
I started my personal entrepreneurial journey as an adult about 15 or 16 years ago. I looked at my local newspaper, circled a bunch of foreclosures, and went out and started buying houses and cleaning them up and selling them. And that at the time was 2001 or 2002, and it was fortuitous. It was a very good time to do that, it turned out. And that was followed up by a very bad time to do that in 2007, 2008. And so learned some very valuable lessons and had some very stinging failures, which were very, very informative and I think humbling. And there's a Mike Tyson quote that, you know, if you are not humble, the universe will visit humility upon you. And so I take that with me moving forward in my life as much as I can. And so then Chris and I built a risk management business over 8 or 9 years and ended up servicing clients in 32 states. And we exited that a few years back. And as we were exiting that and kind of looking at those next phases of things that we might want to do and play with, we took some time to, you know, go on Amazon River tours and climb Mayan pyramids and scuba dive with sharks and do the things that folks do in their mid-30s with an exit. Mm-hmm. you know, from there, we really wanted to take a look at what Chris and all of his interest patterns around technology, what the next generation of tech was. And for me, what challenges I wanted to face and what projects I really wanted to work on in this next phase of my entrepreneurial journey in life. And so that brought us to blockchain as a specific technology. And it brought us to, you know, deploying and developing services within, the enterprise industry space. And we have an internal focus on building some real estate syndication tools on blockchain. And so that's really fun and interesting and a very, you know, exciting vertical. We think it's maybe watching paint dry to other folks. But Lannister Development gets to focus on a client facing side. And so we get to work on and review and dig into projects with everything from manufacturing to swarm robotics and insurance companies and finance and, gaming and gamification and just all kinds of, you know, logistics. So all kinds of really, really interesting things going on in how systems and processes operate right now. And so it's a fun time to be in this space as an entrepreneur. And with that, Chris has his own entrepreneurial journey. A lot of it was segued with mine. But Chris, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Chris. I'm the CTO of Lannister Holding and Development. My background's in software development as well as entrepreneurship. Joe and I have been on this road together for many years at this point. But I have professional degrees in computational mathematics and interests in cryptography, and all these things sort of come together to create the vision of what we're building at the moment, which is really bringing out the bleeding edge technologies and seeing where they go and seeing what we can do with them.
That's really awesome. So what exactly is meant by blockchain technology?
Blockchain is a chain of blocks. Right. So if you imagine transactions being recorded in a block, or a block being sort of a snapshot of a state of data, and then every block that you add is added to a chain so that it is connected to every previous block. It gives you an immutable chain ledger system. So you know whatever the current state is of information in the current block, in the current transaction set. And that's referenced to the previous block in the set so that you know it is only valid, the transactions in that block are only valid if the chain between all of the blocks is consistent.
So whenever people think of blockchain, a lot of them instantly jump to Bitcoin. So is that exactly where people should be thinking, or are there other kind of implications beyond that?
No, it's a distributed, verifiable, secured ledger system. It enables things like cryptocurrencies. It enables peer-to-peer trustless networks. It enables you to have instantaneous transactions of value and of security and anything else you need. It allows you to have trackable data in state situations. State being the state of the data, not a government type state. There's a lot of power and a lot of technology going on there, and things like the consensus algorithms. You know, when you're talking about a blockchain, what I'm talking about is distributed ledger. I'm saying there's a single chain of blocks of data or transactions or information. But that chain is held by 50 or 100 or a million or 10 million people who are all verifying it together and maintaining the same state of data, right? So there's a lot of different pieces of technology that are going on there, and there's a lot of different disruptive and powerful technologies inside that space. And those things are what give power to cryptocurrencies, right? Being able to send 150 million euros worth of Bitcoin to somebody else instantly and for 10 cents or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. That's game changing.
Yeah,
right?
Truly.
I mean, Chase can't do that.
And then, in addition to that, Alex, you've got a lot of really valuable and impactful and powerful use cases inside of existing infrastructure and systems and operations and transactional right contracts. So, as an example, you know, there's three banks in India built a private blockchain between them that just keeps them all together in the loop as far as whether a client came in and pledged collateral to one bank and then went to the second bank to pledge the same collateral for an additional loan, right? And so that's an inspection process on a data set as opposed to a currency process running on a ledger, right? But it's the exact same technology underlying it that's allowing that to happen, that trusted third party, ledger system that can instantly verify, whether or not this is correct or not. And so the use cases across oil and gas and finance and insurance and government, logistics, infrastructure, telecom, for how all of these systems in our daily lives interact and transact data back and forth and maintain operations. And also that rolls over into smart contracts, which, you know, digitally allow a transfer of value, right? So if I have a house and you have Bitcoin and I can, you know, that smart contract is written so that, you know, the person who has the house ends up with the Bitcoin and the person that has the Bitcoin ends up with the house. And that's a very, very simplified explanation. But, that removes an entire layer of cost from a real estate transaction, right? There are, you know, title insurance offices all over the country, multiples of them in every single town that have costs, right? They have office costs, they have staffing costs, they have all of these things that go into this. And essentially, a lot of those functionalities can be automated and digitized, and you can remove large swaths of the cost basis of doing these transactions. And that has nothing to do with the cryptocurrency.
So definitely blockchain is really instrumental as an enabler for allowing businesses to do a lot more. So are there a lot of businesses, I assume, that are already using blockchain technology in their daily interactions and daily just doings that we might not know about?
I wouldn't say that we don't know about, right? There's press every single day about, you know, shipping companies building blockchains. Just yesterday, you know, Delaware issued a no-bid contract to IBM for almost $800,000 to build a prototype of a blockchain. And, as a U.S.-based blockchain development company, I can't say we're super happy that Delaware went with a no-bid contract to IBM. And mm-hmm. So we're gonna have a little conversation about that. But, you know, the people that are, you know, Walmart has deployed blockchains in their systems. Every single financial institution that you know off the top of your head has a blockchain team building use cases, internal and financial instrument use cases, at full speed. There are governments in Europe that are looking at how they move all of their tax bases to blockchain. Bermuda is actively hunting down blockchain development teams and reviewing use cases across their entire government infrastructure. So I kind of like to explain it like your cell phone. Every one of us has a phone. It's in our pocket. We can open it. We can open Angry Birds. We pull the little red bird back. It flies forward. It kills the little green bird. We all know how that works. But it's pretty much magic because none of us actually really know. There's probably 1% of the population on the planet that really knows the code and the systems and the processes that go into making that series of events a reality, right? From the telecom side, from the coding side, from the application side, from the cloud hosting side, from the hardware into the device side of things, right? There's so many systems and processes there that are running on behind the scenes that we all just trust are going to run in the morning. And a lot of those systems and processes can be impacted and disrupted to some extent with blockchain technology. And that's what we are coming to market with. We do not consider ourselves a crypto company. We definitely know that market. We know lots and lots of companies in that space. We know how to build these things. But we are really focused on the enterprise operations and contractual deployment of blockchain in business and systems.
Mm. So are you actively using blockchain in your business and in your real estate transactions as well?
So we are not a real estate company. We have a lot of experience in real estate. We are currently working on the tools to launch, to white label a master limited partnership in the state of Arizona, which is a syndicated real estate finance legal structure in the state of Arizona. And that structure, we are talking to many different partners about having a syndication partner actually do the transaction where they buy the real estate and they're handling the syndication and they're handling the partnership, because we're not in the financial services business. We are in the technology business. So we are working with some companies that are doing fun things in finance. We are working with some companies that are doing some fun things in kind of the lotto type spaces, gaming spaces. Those are all kind of around fintech and financial services related, but we're not looking to go out and do direct financial services.
Okay. So speaking more on fintech, what exactly is fintech and how does it relate to blockchain?
Fintech is just a catchphrase for financial technology.
Okay.
So your Bank of America mobile app, your Chase mobile app, that's fintech. Going into the bank and being able to, swipe your card and have them pull up your accounts and transact things for you is all fintech. So fintech is a very broad statement about just technology and finance. Chris, do you have any drill down on that? Or?
No, that's exactly what fintech means.
Okay, cool. Hey, I nailed it. That's what fintech is. Fintech, insurtech, logistics, these verticals have so much potential disruption because of blockchain, because of the way that they are built, right? They are built to verify trust, right? When you go to the bank and you put your stack of $100 in there, Wells Fargo doesn't take it and stick it in the corner of the safe with a post-it note with your name on it, and it sits there until you need it, right? You are staking your money to the bank with the understanding that you can go to another branch and get it back out.
Sure.
Right. And so that entire system is built and regulated and created in order to create trust. Okay. So you have to create trust in order for me to stake you with my money and then know that I'm going to be able to go get it back. And blockchain technology, not only does it do that, which is like Chris said, you can transfer 150 million euros worth of Bitcoin instantly. Right. And the trust is there that the transaction happened. Whereas if you were to do a wire transfer from one, international institution to another international institution for that volume of dollars, it would probably take you days, right, to complete that transaction. So the reason that we see fintech as such an impact point for blockchain is A, there's a lot of work already going on in it. It's a very natural fit. And B, the problems within fintech, the use cases, the solution points, and the pain points inside of these different verticals are just massive and myriad, right? There's all kinds of different sub verticals that are huge markets of themselves, right? Credit card lending, auto lending, person-to-person lending, on top of securitized packaging of assets and just so many different use cases that all fall under the financial umbrella that, I mean, you could build a company that only probably did that for the next 15 years and do quite well.
Now, there is so much regulation in the world nowadays, like everything we know. The government's always trying to put more rules and laws around it. So do you think that there might be some limitations so we can achieve with blockchain due to all these regulations?
Chris?
Yes, of course. That's the way the world works, right? You don't, the people in charge don't want change, so they put a roadblock in front of it, and change is going to come anyways. So yeah, there's plenty of countries that are putting up regulations. I mean, China goes back and forth, India was banning ICOs or crypto again. The SEC says basically all the tokens are securities, which, duh, that was an obvious one.
Yeah, we agreed with that one for a long time. We weren't very popular with that opinion, but it was definitely our opinion. We're on record early saying, hey, these are securities, just saying.
So yeah, there's going to be a lot of regulatory hurdles. There always are, but that's part of developing new technologies.
Yeah, and that's part of working within the world environment. We actually believe as a core belief, and this is part of the reason, we had several reasons, but this is part of the reason that we chose to do a reverse merger and take our company public. And that was that, you know, the space had this reputation for being a little bit Wild West and this kind of cowboy mentality and anti-regulation and anti-government. And that's not really our take. We're business people. And as business people, we are here to build a scaled, profitable organization for ourselves, our families, and our stakeholders. And in order to do that and to do it successfully, we have to abide by the regulations where we are governed. And so that's one of the main reasons that we're in the state of Arizona. And being in the state of Arizona, Arizona is very blockchain friendly. They have passed a lot of pro-blockchain laws. There's a blockchain sandbox law on the books in Arizona where financial services can be deployed in the real world for up to 2 years for up to 10,000 clients before you have all of the regulatory onus that would go on a normal financial instrument. And blockchain signatures are legal in the state of Arizona. So you can execute a smart contract. It can be signed on the blockchain and that signature is binding. You know, and those kind of things, those are regulation, right? That those bills had to get written. They had to get passed. The governor had to sign them. We were actually at one of the signings for the sandbox law. And, you know, those things being regulated are really good for business and they are good for industry and for growing and scaling and deploying things. So we're really pro regulation, and as such, we're now able to stand up and say, hey, we're not only are we US based, not only are we out of Phoenix, but we're also publicly traded, right? We already have to answer to the regulators, we already have to answer to the state government, we already have to answer to FINRA, we have to answer to OTC markets. And so as that company that is already regulated, we believe that it's a valuable proposition for us going to market and saying, look, we believe in building and deploying these technologies in ways that work within regulations, that help push regulation forward the way that it may need to be, right? Because the technology may disrupt things of why regulations were the way that they were. Sure, that's a possibility. And that's a conversation to be had with the regulators, with the legislators, and with the politicians to make sure that everybody can pull in the same direction and come out with better systems and better processes and better results.
That's great. So looking at more like an entrepreneurial perspective, why exactly did you decide to take your company public? Obviously for getting more in with the regulation, it's kind of like a great milestone to say we are a publicly traded company. We're abiding by the laws, which is why we're trustworthy. It really establishes that trust and connection with both the public and the lawmakers. But what exactly are you hoping to really accomplish in the next like 5 to 10 years within your company?
That was two questions. let me answer both of them. Number one is we decided that this stage of our life and this play would fit a publicly traded company by the size of the blue ocean, by the impact of the technology, and by our strategic setup of how we kind of got here, right? We did a lot of work over several years to put ourselves in a position where we really felt that we had identified a way to scale, that we had identified a market that we could attack and that we could get traction in. And so those things are really important if you're going to be public, because operating a public company is not cheap, right? It costs a lot of money to file all of the things that have to get filed on an annual basis. And so we really have to be able to look at our market and look at our potential for impact and growth in that market and make sure that the scale outweighs the cost of operating a public company. And then not only does the scale up outweigh the cost, but you really have to have a way to see your path towards scaled revenue and profitability, because we have stakeholders, right? We are shareholders in our public company. We have family that's common shareholders in our public company, and our investment group, and plus all of our external shareholders. And so we have a responsibility, a legal actual fiduciary responsibility, to make sure that we are executing our business in a way that adds the most value to all of the stakeholders that are involved. And in order to justify that, you have to be able to look at your market and go, yes, this market is big enough and I know enough to attack it and we can deliver into it for an extended period of time, because that is how you succeed. So that's why we went public.
So for anyone that's listening today, what advice would you have for young entrepreneurs that are really looking to go big with their ideas, but they're not just exactly sure how to get there?
So I'm going to answer this shortly, and then I want Chris to answer it as well, because I think Chris's answer is going to be really cool for young entrepreneurs. But for me, when I'm talking to the younger generation, a couple of things. Number one, stop looking for angels and start looking for angles. The longer you think somebody's going to show up and give you a shot, you're lying to yourself. Nobody's ever going to give you anything. Go get it. And if you can't figure out a way to go get it, you don't deserve it. Too bad. Go home. Cry about it. Number two is, you guys are the future, and you guys and the generation behind you is really going to be the people that use these technologies and learn what these things do and experience the systems change of the next generation of technologies, both this, machine learning, IoT, and then quantum computing. We are very, very interested in propagating and supporting the younger generations in, go learn Solidity, go check out blockchain. If you're looking at doing a startup, consider that blockchain might be a great vertical. A lot of blue ocean, a lot of impact, a lot of use cases. And if that's something that that you are looking at, we'd be happy to talk to you about it and help you build the technology that you need to go to market and things like that. But with that, Chris?
Very similar answer. This entrepreneurship is 90% about going out and getting it. There's quite a bit of luck involved, as with everything in life, depending on how big you can go. But, get out there, work for it, and do what you're actually passionate about, because working at something that you don't like doing sucks. Working for yourself at something you don't like doing and doing it for like 20 hours a day really sucks. So make sure it's something you actually want to do before you go start.
So if you both could look back on this entire process of, your career with everything you've both done, you're so well accomplished. Is there one thing that you would change looking back that you might advise someone younger? Like, oh, don't go down this road because you might not know exactly what you're getting into?
Nah, go fail. That's the best part.
Very true, actually.
While I like that answer, I will say don't be an asshole.
Yeah, but telling people that's not going to help. They have to be an asshole and fail because of it, and then they'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's true. Because being an asshole never served me, and I was pretty good at it. So I much prefer being a mindful, balanced human being that does a lot of yoga, and we are mindfully and consciously setting up, a remote work, diversity first organization. We are, as far as we know, we are the only completely remote work publicly traded company in America.
Can you speak more to that?
Sure. We built Lannister specifically as a remote work company. We don't have an office anywhere in the world. Chris and I had a private consulting firm before this that we did some, fun projects in and lots of dev work and lots of consulting and all kinds of fun things. And we ran that as a remote work organization. Like I said, we prepped for a couple of years on how we wanted to bring our next project really to market. And one of those things was, honestly, for me as an executive, learning how to manage a remote team instead of having people in an office. And that probably took me about a year to kind of figure out how badly I was doing at it. But, after that, we've been able to support a positive culture. We've been able to attract world-class talent. And we've been able to get results without having to have people around a water cooler. And that is because of the technologies that are there to support that, right? You've got all of these communication technologies, all of this structure, Asana and Jira and Slack and, all of these tools for supporting remote work. And then secondarily, it's finding people who don't have a problem delivering results without somebody standing over their shoulder. And that that's a culture issue where you have to be able to trust people to deliver and then hold them accountable for doing so. And then it's also a personal issue with folks. You know, some folks simply can't do it. Some people need a job, right? And so great. But, you know, we believe in lifestyle by design, and neither Chris nor I want to show up in an office at 9 a.m. You know, I'm just not willing to do it. So I'd rather work 20 hours a day from my MacBook.
For sure. So for a lot of younger people that might be listening that are kind of trying to figure out what exactly business model they're wanting to do in their company, would you encourage them to do remote work at a younger age with a startup, or kind of how would you think's the best time to entry into that market? Because it is a really nice concept. You have reduced overhead, you can get world-class talent, and you're not really paying out all the fees of having an actual office location.
Chris, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, as long as, you know, as long as you've had some professional experience and been in an office setting and had the time where people could mentor you on the skills that you need to improve, and you understand how to, you know, manage your own time and manage yourself and be responsible for your own self as a human being. Yeah, absolutely. I love working from home. I encourage everybody to do it.
Nice. So you both, again, are both phenomenal entrepreneurs. So what exactly does entrepreneurship mean to you both?
It means lifestyle by design and the challenge to continually hold myself accountable to myself.
Yeah, that sums it up quite well.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you both. Before we go, I have one last question, and it is, what's the biggest thing about leadership you learned throughout this entire process?
The quality of your life is based on the quality of your questions, and you don't know what you don't know. So if you can humble yourself and ask the stupidest questions in the room, you will normally end up being the smartest person in the room. And then when you're the smartest person in the room, go find a bigger room.
Yeah, go find new people. You don't want to be the smartest person.
You do not want to be the smartest person in a room. You want to achieve that and then move right up to another room where you have to start that process all over again.
That's very true. So, Chris and Joe, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people find you? Your website, social media handles?
Sure. So, LannisterDevelopment.com, and we also have LannisterHoldings.com for the public company. LannisterDevelopment.com is the development website. We're both on LinkedIn. You can look up Lannister Holdings on LinkedIn, and then all of us are tagged as employees on there, as well as Twitter at Lannister CEO, at Lannister Dev. And we'd be happy to take any questions from any of your followers. And we are always looking for amazing talent and amazingly talented people. So if you're one of the listeners and you're a brilliant graphic designer or an absolute brilliant coder, or you are amazing with social media or whatever your art and talent and passion is, and you think that you might be a fit and to be a Lannister, we would love to hear from you as well.
Well, that's great. Hopefully we can make something happen. Well, thank you so much for joining me again, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was great to meet you, and thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It was a great time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for listening today. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us some positive feedback so we can continue to rank higher and impact the lives of more people. And if you're motivated to start pursuing the career of your dreams and would like to speak with me directly for guidance, check out the consulting portion of our website on launchyourlife.today and let us prove to you that anything is possible. We hope to have you back soon, so subscribe to be notified about upcoming episodes and never miss out on what's coming next in the near future. See you soon.